Good morning. My name is Christy, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Report on Public Finances and Public Debt for the Fourth Quarter of 2010 conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. I would now like to hand the program over to Dr. Miguel Messmacher. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Mexican Ministry of Finance conference call for the results on the fourth quarter of the year. A bit late, but better late than ever. A happy new year to everybody. As usual, I'll start with the initial remarks on public finances and economic activity, and then Alejandro Díaz de León, the new chief of the unit for public credit, will give his remarks on public debt, so it will also be your chance to meet him for the first time. He's a very old friend of ours with a very distinguished trajectory at the Central Bank, Pensioniste, and many other places. So without further ado, let me start with my comments. They'll be very brief. All of you have our very detailed bulletin, so I would just like to highlight a couple of aspects. From the point of view of economic activity, in general, the information that we have for the fourth quarter of the year is quite favorable, suggesting that actually there was an important acceleration in economic activity during the fourth quarter of the year. We announced a forecast for growth during the fourth quarter of 3.8%, though I have the perception that it's somewhat conservative, and I think that there is some upside risk associated with this forecast. In turn, this forecast implies a growth rate for the year as a whole of 5.3%, which has a slight upside risk, I would say, but obviously the results for the fourth quarter would need to change very significantly to have an effect in terms of the growth rate for the year as a whole. Now, going over sort of more specific details in terms of economic activity. And in that sense, as you know, in our report, we basically report growth rates in annual terms, sort of the Mexican style. But I think that looking at sequentially, seasonally adjusted growth rates for the first quarter is quite important in the sense that they indicate that potentially an important process of reacceleration is actually taking place. So if we actually look at the average seasonally adjusted monthly growth rate for the IGAE in the period from October-November, we basically observe a seasonally adjusted monthly non-annualized growth rate of 1.2%, and this compares with average monthly growth rates in the second quarter of 0.2% and of 0.9% in the third quarter. So we're observing a process of acceleration from a low in the second quarter of this year towards a relatively high rate of 1.2% in the fourth quarter of the year for overall IGAE. In terms of manufacturing exports, we're observing a similar pattern. The average monthly growth rate came down from a growth rate of 8.5% in the first quarter of the year to 2.3% in the second quarter, but then 3.3% in the third quarter, and finally 4.4% in the fourth quarter. So we're observing a relatively good process of acceleration there. In terms of ANTAD sales actually accelerated from the first quarter to the second quarter from 1.1% to 1.6%. But then given the deceleration in economic activity, they decelerated slightly to 1.3% in the third quarter, but have accelerated back again to 1.4% in the fourth quarter of the year. In terms of automobile production, we've observed a similar pattern, an important deceleration from the second to the third quarter, with growth rates moving from 5.7% to a negative 0.3%, but then a positive one of 2.3% in the fourth quarter. Same services having relatively moderate rates of growth of 0.3% in the second and third quarter, but then accelerating to 0.7% in the fourth quarter. And then in terms of employment, again, a deceleration from the second to the third quarter, moving from 1.4 to 0.7, but then reaccelerating to 1.4% in the fourth quarter of the year. So actually the pattern is fairly consistent with an initial deceleration during the second quarter being driven basically by the deceleration that was observed in the same period during the U.S., but then a gradual reacceleration during the rest of the year, this as regards to non-oil exports and to manufacturing production, and then with a lag, the same thing happening with domestic sales, services, and employment, but where by already the fourth quarter of the year, we're starting to observe an important acceleration. As you know, this led us to revise our growth forecast for the year to a number of 5.3%, which I just mentioned, but it has also led us to revise our growth forecast for 2011 from 3.8 to 4%. This forecast actually uses the numbers from the latest blue chip indicators, which are of the beginning of January. My personal impression is that these do not fully incorporate, as of yet, the effects of the new fiscal stimulus package that was announced in the U.S. And in that respect, probably when we get the results from the blue chip and the consensus forecast surveys in February, the growth rates for both U.S. GDP and in particular industrial production will probably be revised upwards further still. We will probably not be making any type of adjustments immediately in terms of our growth forecast, but as you know, we sent a document of Precriterios Generales de Política Económica, sort of our six-month update on the budget and on economic activity to Congress, and probably by then we might be making some adjustments to our growth forecast by looking at sort of these revised growth forecasts for the U.S. as well as having a couple of additional months of activity, particularly already from 2011. Moving very quickly to the part on public finances, there are basically three major points I would like to emphasize regarding the results on public finances for 2010 as a whole. Basically, the public balances came out basically in line with what was approved by Congress. The public sector deficit without investment by Pemex was 0.8% of GDP, and that including investment by Pemex was 2.8%. The second point is that we observed a relatively favorable evolution in terms of public sector revenues. Annual growth rates seem to be moderate in real terms, but that's basically due to the fact that the extraordinary non-recurrent revenues that we observed in 2009, mainly those associated with the profits of the central bank and with the recovery of resources from our oil stabilization funds, did not repeat into 2010. But that reduction in non-recurrent revenues was more than compensated by the good results that we observed in terms of oil revenues, non-oil tax revenues, and revenues of public entities under direct budgetary control different from Pemex. Overall, we observed that non-oil revenues reached 10% of GDP. This is very positive in the sense that it's the highest number that we've observed for the ratio of non-oil tax revenues to GDP since we have numbers, which is 1965. But obviously, the numbers still remain relatively low in comparative terms. But we're anticipating that this ratio will continue to increase in 2011 and in 2012. We observed windfall revenues of 163 billion pesos, slightly more than 1% of GDP. Most of these revenues were associated with higher revenues of the entities under direct budgetary control, Pemex, CFE, IMCISTE, due to a combination of factors. In the case of Pemex and CFE, clearly the issue of higher fuel higher gasoline prices at the international level for Pemex, for CFE higher costs, which were partly translated into prices for consumers, which also led to higher revenues for CFE. In the case of IMSS and ISSSTE, obviously the higher recovery in employment than expected led to higher revenues than were originally envisaged. Finally, total expenditures increased by 3.6% in 2010, and within programmable expenditures increased by 3.2%. Something that we think is very important to highlight is that in terms of overall investment and the program of investment in infrastructure, in spite of all the things that you might see in the news regarding under execution of investment, investment actually increased, fostered investment actually increased by 7% in real terms, and that's executed investment, reaching a level of 4.8% of GDP, which is the highest in 28 years. Suffice it to say that this number does not include investment by Fonavin. If we were to include fostered investment by Fonavin into these numbers, we would be observing a number of investment to GDP higher than 5%. With that, I would finish my remarks and pass on to Alejandro Díaz de León.
Hello, good morning. I appreciate Miguel's comments. First of all, I'll start with a brief overview of the strategy for public debt management, which, as you know, last year maintained a high degree of flexibility in order to cope with the developments in both domestic and international financial markets, looking to diversify the sources of financing and broadening the investor base. Regarding the domestic front, you know that the improvement in market conditions in last year allowed the public debt structure to reach its pre-crisis levels with an increase in the placement of long-term instruments. Just to give a picture of this, the marginal average maturity and duration of the gross issuance of domestic fixed-rate bonds recovered to 9.3 and 5.4 years, respectively, while in the fourth quarter of last year, while these figures were 6 and 4 years in the fourth quarter of 2008. This allowed for an increase in average maturity of domestic debt by around 0.9 years, from 6.3 to 7.2 years from the end of 2009 to the end of 2010, and the share of long-term fixed-rate government securities increased from 55.3% to 60.4% in the same period. Now going into external financing, I would highlight that the actions carried during the fourth quarter, basically one of the most important ones, was the $1 billion issuance maturing in 2110, the so-called 100-year maturity bond, with a yield to maturity of 6.1%, which I think this took advantage of the very benign global conditions. And then the issuance of 150 billion yen, roughly equivalent to 1.8 billion U.S. dollar, maturing in 2020, with a yield to maturity of 1.5%. Another topic that I would just briefly mention on the domestic side is that during November last year, the federal government launched what we call CETES Directos platform, which is a facility to allow small retail investors to acquire government securities directly. This is a feature that is common in some developed and some developing economies, but it was not present here in Mexico, and I think it's a very attractive opportunity to small retail investors to purchase CETES or other instruments issued domestically. In terms of public debt markets, the stock of the federal government net domestic debt at the end of 2010 stood at 25.4% of GDP. I would just highlight that from this amount, 4.8% of GDP corresponds to external debt and 20.6% to domestic component. Now going into the public sector's net debt, which include, as you know, net debt of the federal government, public entities under direct budgetary control, and the development bank, was 30.9% of GDP. And just the last figure I would mention is that the historical balance of the public sector borrowing requirement, which you will know, is the most broad definition for debt, amounted to 35.2% of GDP at the end of last year. So that will be all of my comments, and we will open up to questions.
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Once again, that's star 1 to ask a question. You have a question from the line of Benito Berber with Nomura.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much for the presentation. Just two questions. The first one is, what is the outlook for gasoline prices given the higher oil prices? And the second one is about all this noise about a fiscal reform that is being sort of proposed by the PRI. Is there, apparently what I've read in the press is that this proposal to lower it to 12% but include all goods, is that something that you would favor, or what is the minimum level of the VAT that you would feel comfortable in supporting? Thank you.
Hi, Benito. On the question on the fiscal reform, we basically do not know the details of the PRI reform. We know exactly the same things you do, which are very vague. So clearly, we would need to wait and see the complete proposal. Now, in terms of things that we need, the proposal would need to... So clearly, I mean, we're in a disposition to discuss with them a reform that would make sense in terms of improving the structure. Now, what that would imply is that at the very least, you would need to have important efficiency gains in terms of the structure, with it being neutral in terms of revenues. Obviously, our view is that it should actually lead to higher revenues as well. So in that sense, anything that weakens overall non-oil tax revenues would be something that would not be well seen by us. But in terms of the details, we haven't seen absolutely any details in terms of the proposal. We're exactly in the same situation as you guys are. We're open to review the proposal that they have, but clearly it does need to be in the very least revenue neutral with an important efficiency gain in terms of a simpler structure for taxes. So that's regarding the fiscal reform. Regarding gasoline prices, so far we're basically going to be maintaining our same policy of gradual increments, considering inflationary expectations together with opportunity costs. And we think that it's relatively soon to have a good idea of what we can expect during the year for overall oil and gasoline prices, in the sense that, as you know, the problems in the north of Africa and in the Middle East have clearly led to some increases in oil prices, but those clearly could prove to be temporary. So we will need to observe what is going on with oil prices during the rest of the year before we make any type of decision to make sure that these changes are of a more permanent nature. But in principle, we're maintaining the same policy that we have been maintaining so far.
Thank you.
Again, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. And there are no further questions at this time.
Could you just make one last round, operator, and to check if there are any additional questions?
Certainly. Again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. And there are no questions at this time.
Okay. Thank you very much, operator. Thank you, everybody, for listening into the conference call. And as you know, if you have any additional questions or comments, you can contact Alejandro or me, and obviously through the Investor Relations Office.
Excuse me. Thank you,
and have a good day.
Mr. Masnasser, you did have
yes.
a question come in from Arturo Juarez from NodBank.
Okay.
What's going to be the impact on the participaciones distributed to the municipalities and states with the increment in the price of oil? Or is there's no expectation of growth? And also, if you have any numbers of the debt on the municipalities and states?
On the issue of the participaciones, and I guess there's a more general question about excess revenues. It's not only oil, but obviously oil is the most obvious component that could lead to the expectation of windfall revenue. Clearly, the levels of oil we're observing, in spite of the appreciation of the peso, if sustained, should be leading to windfall revenues. Now, obviously, we think it's way too early in the year for us to start anticipating that we would have a significant amount of windfall revenues during 2011, but obviously there is a possibility. Now, it turns out that participaciones, given the way in which oil revenues go into the determination of the revenues that then are distributed, are relatively insensitive to the oil price. So in that respect, there could be a little bit more of participaciones than one would expect, but they would not be very large. What would happen if, you know, there is this fee that is charged when the oil, that is charged on all exports when the price of oil is above the level in the budget, and that's a fee that goes into the stabilization fund of the state. So potentially what could be happening is that the stabilization fund of the state actually receives a significant amount of revenues, which allows them to prepay early the loan that they asked for in 2009. If you remember, the state actually asked for a loan, which was actually where actually the collateral, in a sense, where the fees that were going to be coming from this royalty when the price of oil is above the one that is in the budget. So that would be the place where we would notice much more clearly the effect of any excess revenues received by the state more than in the participaciones. As to the levels of public debt, unfortunately, we do not have good data on their short-term debt. What they do need to report to us are their levels of debt during a certain period of maturity. But this implies that we actually have to work on sort of refining the short-term debt indicators that we have for the states. The information that we have, we can certainly send it out to anybody who is interested, so let us know through the Investor Relations Office. But once again, it's information that's partially incomplete in the sense that typically we have a pretty good registry of long-term debt for the states, but if the states actually get short-term debt from commercial banks, there the information is a bit more patchy.
And there are no further questions.
Okay, thank you very much, everybody, for listening in, and have a good day.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.